Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
And be sure to tune in to Bathurst Pier's Broadsides. That's with me, Robert North, on 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org every Thursday night, 6 to 8 p.m. And, of course, every Sunday morning from 9:30 all the way to 1 p.m. If you're game.
Listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 and www.freakradio.org. Remember to tune in to From the Cream to the Dregs with Uncle Dennis every Thursday night at 8 o'clock. Music from the 60s and the 70s brought to you on Free Radio Santa Cruz and nowhere else.
Coming up next on Free Radio, it is Bathurst Spears Broadsides, hoping that we are actually streaming. Do stay tuned, and I'll be with you in a moment. Lots of interviews coming up, and who knows, you may even hear your own voice on the air if you call in.
Middle of the summer, midnight and sleep, sitting in a crowded apartment, about 110 degrees. I went outside the middle of the night. All I had was a match. Nowhere to turn, burn, baby, burn.
I called President Johnson on the phone. The secretary said he wasn't there. I tried to get in touch with Mr. Humphrey. He couldn't find him anywhere.
And, of course, he means Obama and Vice President what's his name? Was it Levin? What the fuck is it? I don't recall. My goodness, my own vice president. It shows you the depths to which I've fallen. All these politicians are beginning to look the same to me. Here you are, and here I am. It's Free Radio Santa Cruz's much underrated show, Bathurst Spears Broadsides. I'll be with you for 2 hours. We are back online, and a tip of the hat to Uncle Dennis for that. He'll be coming in at 8, I'm presuming, after a vacation to pick up his usual cream to the dregsing, which he does for 3 hours, along with some Earth First-ish type updates. So stay tuned for that and for my show, which is coming right up. I'm going to dive right into some street interviews and... Well, you can tell me what you think. You can call in 427-3772, area code 831. 427-3772 is the call-in number for this show. If you want to call off air, it's an even simpler number, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF. And that's 423-4833 if you only have numbers on your phone. That's if you want to talk to me personally, you have some information that you don't really want to talk about on air, or you have something else that... needs to be discussed by the by. If you want to get a hold of the radio station itself because you have a PSA or some other donation perhaps, some other bit of information you want to pass on to the whole collective, a question, a complaint about our use of foul language or perhaps our use of euphemisms, who knows what your objection is, you can give a call or a suggestion to the Freak Radio voicemail, which is 427-4523. 427-4523. But the real number to remember is the call-in number on the air, because that gives you a chance to talk to me and me a chance to hear you and feel I'm being heard out there, because it's always a boost to know that at least one person is listening to you. 427-3772 is the call-in number here. Let's begin now with some street interviews. That song you just heard was a bit from the old 60s hit Burn Baby Burn with Jim Collier and Frederick Douglass Kirkpatrick. We've heard the song in its entirety on prior shows, so if you're interested in hearing more of it, just let me know and we'll fire it up, so to speak. Let's go on to some street interviews. I believe this is from September 18th is what we're talking. And we're kind of catching up with some older interviews. Then I'll be reading you for some updates around demonstrations in Portland, Seattle, action up in Vancouver. And I'd kind of hope to get a call actually from Portland activists who are on the lawn of City Hall up in Portland, Oregon, protesting what else? Laws that criminalize poor and homeless people up there. Strangely enough, as they do here in Santa Cruz. So stay tuned and give a call. 427-3772 is the call-in number.
With a man, we have an anonymous individual here who's pointed out that apparently at San Lorenzo River there are 9 police officers trying to remove a swimmer from the river.
He started a fire and then put it out and he ran in the river.
I see. So he kind of
a little campfire.
But his pants weren't on fire, nothing like that.
No.
All right, so we'll check that out later. Thank you.
That was just like 20 minutes ago, 10 minutes ago.
Well, I'm. It sounds like a hot story, but I'm going to avoid it. Thank you, sir. Talking with
Lily
and
Raven.
And Raven. Now I understand you have a baby on the way.
Yes.
And you have not been bothered by the Santa Cruz Police Department.
No, not really. We haven't been bothered at all.
And are you indoors or outdoors?
We're indoors.
And how much time would you be outdoors when you would likely to be bothered by the? I mean, you are of course sitting illegally.
I'm in our motorhome all the time. Wake up, move, fucking bullshit. You know.
So you are being bothered. In a way.
Well, sort of, yeah, in the motorhome. But I can tell you, maybe you don't know this, maybe you do, but everybody was parking over the Sentinel as of yesterday, right, Raven?
Or as of today.
Today, it is no longer public parking. They will tow vehicles if they're parked
because
over there.
Because why? It's so needed by old Sentinel ghosts, so they want to kind of haunt the area.
Actually, Cruzio and some other company bought it together for $3 million. So it is no longer.
It was some supposedly liberal corporation bought it. I guess the liberals don't want your kind parking their vehicles.
Apparently not. But there are other people that park there that actually work in the surrounding area, and they can't park there either. So
they're going to fuck with everybody. How nice of them.
Pretty much.
It makes us feel so much better.
So much better.
All right, well.
That's all I have to report.
And again, we've been talking with?
Lily.
And?
Raven.
Thank you, guys.
Bless you, but you must be crazy by now.
I'm for sure. I'm talking on the street here in front of the Gap. Here's a man with a nice looking display. Got yard work, need food, please help. And he's in camouflage outfit. But you're a man who's seen me from somewhere before, right?
Yeah. And, boy, as early as, I don't know, the late 80s, I would say, for sure.
We're talking with?
My name's Christopher. Yeah.
Christopher,
yeah.
And you remember. Remember older times in Santa Cruz fighting the sleeping van and things like that?
Yeah. I remember a lot of things. I think probably the most avid tale of destruction was me and Phil Free pushing the actual transmitter for Free Radio Santa Cruz through up the San Lorenzo Riverbed while the sheriff deputies were... Oh, look at
looks
that.
Like you have a collection of yellow...
I've been busy, yeah.
Yellow tickets.
Oh, yeah.
Let's take a look. Let me choose.
Pick a ticket here.
See what kind of tickets you've got.
Shoplifting ticket.
Let's find out. You've got shoplifting.
This
says panhandling. My goodness, it's a little hard to read here. Panhandling within 14 feet of an intersection.
Yeah, I was in front of the Super Silva.
And it is, of course, officer... It's a woman, Officer Wilson, who gave it to you. What did she tell you? How did this ticket happen? This was... looks like
sitting there
about a month ago.
Same exact signs you see here. Exact thing. Just it's a standard setup. It's like months old, man. It's like it could be like in the Smithsonian or begging at this point. The signs are so old. So what you see is what you got. Hat, sign says I need food. Not even actually, technically speaking, according to the Constitution, not asking for money.
Need food, please help.
Yeah, please help. And they're first for you to drop off food. In fact, I've become the local soup kitchen here in the corner. I mean, the kids come to me. I fill the bag up by the end of the day, and I can't possibly eat it all.
Have you? But you were given a ticket for panhandling within 14 feet of an intersection. What did she tell you when she gave you this?
She was very sorry she had to do it, but she was under orders that she was to crack down as much as she possibly could on homeless people.
She actually said those words, homeless people, and crack down or not?
Crack down, yes. Homeless people, possibly not.
And
to clarify, but certainly it was enough. I drew a crowd. I mean, usually when it happens to me, all of these times, I've been on busy times like a weekend. I tend to like these kind of days. You know, obvious reason, you make more lucrative take. You know what I mean? So.
Because of the weather and so forth.
Yeah, and in every case, the crowd has been very generous afterwards in netting me anywhere from $20 to $50, and I would call them sympathy donations at that point. Basically, people feeling very, very bad. The worst one, though, is this officer.
What kind of an act do you do, Christopher?
Well, I don't do much of anything. I mean, my act is not really anything more than the truth. I'm poor. I need, you know, a job. You know, if somebody's got one out there, if this is broadcast on the Internet now, which we have, how about that? Does the Internet rule or not? Because the last time we spoke...
Yeah, we are on the Internet.
There was no Internet.
Well...
There was no cell phone, barely. I mean, I carried one, but it was like this big, and I had like a big whopping Motorola.
I'm still not on the cell phone.
And just a quick commentary. We are on the Internet now at www.freakradio.org because of the good work of Catch-as-Catch-Can Coral Brune, one of our top, I don't want to say talk show hosts. She's not talk show. It's a broad. She's a broadcaster. And, of course, the inevitable Uncle Dennis, who has been helping to put everything back together again, not to mention probably a bunch of other folks. So thank you, all you techies, for putting the station back on the web. And I don't know if, I guess the website is back up again. Freakradio.org was down earlier today, and I'm not quite sure why that was. Perhaps when Uncle Dennis comes in, he'll give us an update on that. Back to Christopher on the streets. Christopher, yes, in case some of you recognize the voice, this is the same Christopher who has twice served as co-host on Sunday shows, and will probably be back next Sunday to again assist and to resist. He's a man who lives outside, but he trudges into town to work on this show, at least a couple of weekends he has. And thanks for doing that, Chris.
There are cell phones aplenty.
We elected a president with some incredible technology, didn't we? I don't know. The world.
Yeah, they're just bombing the shit out of Afghanis. We can thank the president for that, right?
Which one?
Obama.
Who do you want to thank? I mean,
both of them, but particularly Obama, the one that's doing it now.
I mean, look at the political cartoon of the day here. We have
the stimulus is working, and then you have a couple of people under the bridge roasting a cat or a rat. Right?
Yeah, and even the guard could be taken metaphorically as like sort of the dubious middle class, not really crushed yet, but you know he's kind of like whatever.
How are things?
You got the Obama symbol on the castle. I mean,
how are things downtown as far as are people generous? Are they tight fisted?
The more they crack down, the harder. They crack, and they you know, Rob, as good as I do, they can crack balls out here.
But what about in terms of the public? Are they being generous to you?
The public are exponentially more generous the more they crack down, which is the ultimate irony of Santa Cruz is that the karma cannot be changed. It cannot, the magic of this place cannot be altered even by the greatest evil, and that's what 25 years of coming here has taught me. I don't know what it's taught you, but the irony of it is that it's worth the fight.
I love your attitude. I don't know if I agree with your perspective, but that's great.
It's worth the fight. I mean, it's worth the fight. It's a place that means enough, and the rights that we exercise here, and the things that we do here, the creativity that flows here, the political alliances and networks that can be bred and incubated here. The sheer beauty and the weather. I mean, it all makes it worth it. It all makes it worth it. It's a beautiful place. It's one of those little paradises. It's worth fighting for. It's worth, banging your head against the machine. You know, I wonder how many tickets I'll get before they put some stupid court order on me. And then it gets sticky because I ain't going nowhere. You know, it's America.
How long have you been back?
Came back with the dead tour, so I'm saying maybe May or so, June 1st.
And you're outside.
I actually live the same place I've traditionally lived, which you may have forgotten, but I really tend to like the mountains, so I go way up past Davenport. I take the 40 out all the way to Waddell Creek, and I'm up. I have no really clue exactly, because I'm kind of on the dividing line between Big Basin, Redwood Forest.
Beware, this is going out on the radio.
That's fine. Big Basin, Redwood. Well, I'm not going to give longitude and latitude, and it's an 8,000-acre forest. Good fucking luck with that, okay? Pretty well hit. But in any case, yeah, I'm on the border between Old Man McGurdy's land, the Big Big Creek Lumber, and then the Big Basin, Redwood Forest. I'm not exactly sure. I move from time to time, and so I probably go back and forth across the border. But, you know, both of those men, the ranger at the ranger station and Old Man Bud McGurdy, know me. I mean, Bud McGurdy was giving me, you know, day work shoveling sawdust 20 years ago. So, he don't have so much to say. It'd probably be something like, hey, Chris, move. You know what I mean? So,
Christopher, thank you. I've got a roll, but...
Yeah. Hey, it's just good to see you around. I mean, it really is. And say hi to everybody at the radio station. Uncle Dennis worked with me even after I left, because I started an internet radio station back east. So Uncle Dennis worked with me for years and years and years with Unbroken Chain Internet Radio. And that went out of business.
Well, we'll catch you again later.
Yeah. Just come
thanks,
around anytime.
Christopher.
And, of course, we did catch Christopher on two Sundays running, and we may catch him again next Sunday. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. Again, a special thank you to Coral, who overstayed her show and spent some time and apparently racked up some absurd parking ticket struggling to put the station back up on the air. So my show, the most important show, of course, on Free Radio, would be able to go out, and you could hear it tonight. Thanks, Coral. You can call in if you wish to commend me, her, or anybody else, or have you have any questions or reports from the street. Hey, that's always a big topic with me. 427-3772 is the call-in number. Area code 831 for those of you who are in Wyoming. 427-3772. Here's a little song which I'm playing sort of on request. It's a David Rovick song about polyamory. And you know what that is, don't you? That's loving many people. And probably fucking many people, too. So keep that in mind.
Immigrants from purchasing insurance. The letter says, quote, it's not rational to exclude individuals who are willing and able to share in the responsibility of paying.
It just made sense. She was lamenting the state of affairs, how some people can be so dense.
We had a little static at the beginning of that. My apology. Let's begin again, shall we? Let's give Rovix the attention he deserves.
I heard a woman talking, and to me what she said just made sense. She was lamenting the state of affairs, how some people can be so dense. She said she had three wonderful children, two girls and their little brother. And nobody gave her problems for loving each child as much as the other. But they'll say you are better, perhaps you are madder, at least you should stay undercover. Your mind must be bare if you would dare to think you can love more than one lover. I like Italian espresso, but I also dig French wine. And now and then that BC bud leaves me feeling fine. I like to get a buzz sometimes, I like sobriety. Most people understand this, they also like variety. But they'll say you are better, perhaps you are madder, at least you should stay undercover. Your mind must be bare if you would dare to think you can love more than one lover. Well, I like the redwood forests, but the desert makes me wanna sing. And those little Irish villages when the church bells ring. I like to busk in Boston and hang out in the cafes in Berlin. I like lots of different places and nobody tells me it's a sin. But they'll say you are better, perhaps you are madder, at least you should stay undercover. Your mind must be bare if you would dare to think you can love more than one lover. Each one of the four seasons leaves me feeling good. Sitting in the shade in summer, in the winter chopping wood. Sometimes I like cloudy days, but I also dig the sun. And I don't think I'm crazy for having so much fun. But they'll say you are better, perhaps you are madder, at least you should stay undercover. Your mind must be bare if you would dare to think you can love more than one lover. They'll say you are better, perhaps you are madder, at least you should stay undercover. Your mind must be bare if you would dare to think you can love more than one lover.
And that was David Rovick's. Get it on YouTube. It's... let's see. The formal name for that song is... Polyamory's song. I think that's the name of that song. At least that's what it's called on the YouTube. Check it out if you're interested. Quick update now from a couple places. And let's see if our mics are mics working.
Yeah, well, sort of.
Kind of.
Let's see here.
Yeah. Unclear what's going on here with these mics. Let's get it together. Let's see. Make sure they don't fall over on me, as often happens. Let's see here. I think you can hear me now. It looks like you can hear me anyway. Here's a couple updates I found earlier this afternoon, which I think are worth looking at. From Vancouver, BC, the Globe and Mail. Justin Hunter writes, "The right to sleep in the street ends in extreme winter," maintains British Columbia's top law official. Attorney General Mike DeJong told reporters yesterday he is satisfied that the province can draft a law that would allow police to compel people living on the street to go to homeless shelters if winter weather threatens their health. Here in Santa Cruz, they just tell you to go to hell or get lost because we haven't got any shelters. Whether it's winter weather, fall weather, or summer weather. Actually, I guess the armory will open, which will provide more space. But right now, all shelters are full, according to Doug Loisel of the Homeless Service Center. And that means people outside face $97 citations tonight, which they are getting regularly, particularly those people who sleep on the levee near the downtown area. And others are getting citations as well, which you'll be hearing some reports from probably in tonight's recorded stuff, which I've been picking up and trying to stuff on the air as quickly as I can. However, up in, I believe in British Columbia, they are forcibly putting people in shelters, apparently, or arresting them if they don't go to shelters because of the winter weather.
at least they have something to offer them. I don't think that may be the next step in terms of, you know, one's right to refuse shelter if it's offered one. But we don't even have that here. We have instead Mike Rotkin, our vice mayor, and Cynthia Matthews, our mayor, and essentially the entire city council, lying to the community about what wonderful homeless services the city is providing and how there are no real civil rights violations in Santa Cruz around this fundamental issue, which, of course, there are every night. Every time someone gets a ticket, every time someone is moved along by the police, they are being treated unconstitutionally, unlawfully, and also in violation of basic human rights conventions in terms of right to be free from torture, for example. Sleep deprivation is torture. If you don't have a place for someone to sleep, you don't start waking them up and moving them along as though you did. That's, of course, the lie that the Santa Cruz Police Department promulgates every time it does that. Attorney General Mike DeJong of British Columbia says, should that freedom to choose include the right to be on the sleep and die when there are beds and facilities available? The objective here is imminently defensible, and that is saving people's lives. The proposed Assisting to Shelter Act is the legacy of a homeless woman who burned to death in her makeshift shelter last winter. A 47-year-old Vancouver woman known as Tracy, that's Vancouver, B.C., rebuffed appeals from police to go to a shelter on December 19th. The city's extreme weather protocol was in effect, meaning there were temporary shelter beds available that night. However, not everyone views it as a humanitarian law. The proposal, quote, is nothing less than an outrageous and likely illegal imposition on the civil liberties of the homeless. NDP, I think that's New Democrat Party, housing critic Shane Simpson told the legislature yesterday. Housing Minister Rich Coleman's plans to introduce the legislation this fall were prematurely unveiled in the Globe and Mail on Monday. Mr. Coleman confirms he wants to give police and paramedics the authority to forcibly bring homeless people to shelters where they can escape extreme winter conditions, but he said no one will force them to stay. Kind of weird. If they go back on the street, that's their choice, Mr. Coleman told reporters in Victoria, standing in a lot where he promised money to build a 44-unit housing development for the hard to house. We're not going to be some police state that says we're locking you up. Just going to be arresting you and dragging you in, and then you can walk away, I guess. That's an interesting plan. Shelter operators questioned the effectiveness of such a law yesterday, while civil liberties groups suggested it would be ripe for a Charter of Rights and Freedoms, that's the Canadian sort of constitution, challenge. But the debate in the legislature predictably descended into a contest about which party best represents the interests of the homeless. Carol James, the NDP leader and the Liberals, have had 8 years to come up with a plan for affordable housing. Here we are coming up to another winter where the government doesn't have a plan in place, she said. I'm sorry, Carol James, the NDP leader, said that Liberals have had 8 years. Liberals are in power. The New Democratic Party, NDP, is challenging them. She stopped short of accusing the government of trying to sweep the streets clean before Vancouver hosts the 2010 Winter Olympic Games. Oh, they'd never do such a thing. But said, I can understand why people would think that. In the question period, Mr. Coleman challenged the NDP, would you have the humanity to find solutions? He noted there were 700 shelter beds in B.C. when his party took power from the NDP in 2001, and there are three times as many beds funded today. Ms. James responded, there are still not enough shelter beds today, and questioned what police would do if they're supposed to be delivering homeless people to shelters that are already full. Mr. Coleman told reporters, that's of course our problem in Santa Cruz, shelters are always full during most of the spring and all the summer and most of the fall, and during the winter, if they're not full, there are many times as many homeless people as there are shelter beds or spots on the floor. I guess they're beds now. I'm not sure if the Interface Satellite Shelter Program is actually operational. I don't think it is. That's the program that used to take people to the floors of churches, not beds, but cots or mats on the floor. Not that it isn't nice for those who want it, in the sense that it's certainly a step up from being outside shivering in the cold. In fact, it's something many of us demonstrated for, some of us, myself included, were arrested for back in 1988-89 when we demanded that the River Street mini shelter open up its beds to people who wanted them. But it no way deals with the issue of survival and the right to sleep legally somewhere for homeless people at night, because there just isn't enough. And because there isn't enough, people have to have a right to sleep somewhere while that crisis is happening. This is obvious, but you try to talk to a politician about this and you get double talk. I've actually asked Councilmember and Vice Mayor Mike Rotkin to get back to me on this since I played recently his statement, and we'll be playing it again, back in 1988, just as false then as it was now, as it is now. And Mike hasn't gotten back to me. So I may have to try him again. I've called him twice. I may have to call him a third time. Anyway, getting back to this article about Vancouver's cleanup policies or the proposed law to force people to go into shelters during winter weather, which of course has nothing to do with the Winter Olympics and sweeping people off the streets in 2010. What are you going to do if the shelters are already full? Mr. Coleman told reporters he doesn't think there will be many occasions where police would need to invoke the law, probably five or six times a winter in Vancouver, maybe a couple of times in Victoria or Prince George, he said. The night Tracy died, officers from the Vancouver Police Department offered shelter to 101 people. Only 12 accepted. The extreme weather protocol was invoked on 37 nights in Vancouver last winter. No small number of cases where police might, under the proposed law, have reason to act. And, of course, what that really talks to is how wretched the shelters probably are, how restrictive they are, how inhospitable they are, and I'm occasionally reminded, it comes back to my mind, that shelters kind of began in the New York area, according to one source I've read, in the late 70s and early 80s, when they essentially gutted the housing codes to allow what amount to concentration camps, places where homeless people can be concentrated, without really adequate shelter or housing, without adequate freedom, without adequate rights, by lifting restrictions on and requirements for decent housing. And that reminds me again of what one author has described homeless people to be, which is to say displaced urban residents. Many homeless people are simply displaced urban residents. People are now losing their housing in the suburbs, but you know, for decades they've been losing their housing elsewhere as the economy goes to shit. Anyway, that's a story from Vancouver. It's from the Globe and Mail, Weather Trumps Homeless Rights, according to the Attorney General, and then the response of civil rights activists. Let's get back to some interviews from the street. Again, I think we're talking September 18th. Let's hear more.
Well, it's Saturday night, 19th of September, 2009, and here at the corner of Pacific and Walnut, listening to the music of Robert Facer, or is it Facer, I'm not sure, the man with the hat of many feathers, and of course he is playing illegally with a display device within 10 feet of a crosswalk, not that it's bothering anybody, he's also within 10 feet of a telephone. This man should probably get two citations, but I think I'll let him slide for the moment.
And it's interesting we run into Robert Facer, because he actually is going to trial on a sleeping ban ticket, 1:30 Tuesday, October 6th, mark that on your calendar, 1:30 October 6th in Department 10. And that is in the basement of the county building, the five-story building right next to the courthouse on Ocean Street. You might want to check out that situation. It's at Ocean and Water, the county building, 1:30 p.m., October 6th. Robert Facer. Robert is a very colorful-looking fellow. He's his beard is wider than mine. He's a grizzled-looking character. His property was recently stolen from him. He had a long kind of triangular tent cart that he kind of pushed around, and he's often downtown, although police crackdowns by people like Winchester Winston, as I like to call him, Officer Winston, Officers Warren, Officer Wilson, and so forth, have reduced, apparently, to some extent, the number of people downtown. Although, you know, life flows on. New people keep coming to town. Again, 1:30, October 6th, Department 10. Check out Robert Faser's trial. He's going to be defended by attorney Ed Fry. It should be interesting. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert.
Hello, Robert. This is Bob Patton.
Hey, Bob, of the One Time Human Rights Organization.
Yes, we need to make a little eulogy there for the you know, that disbanding of the human rights organization. But I think in our on the good side of what happened here is I wanted to announce, and you know about it already, that with the at the final meeting, the remaining members of the human rights organization had decided to make awards to some people in the community who had made some difference in the issues, or on the issues that we're concerned about, along with you, what you've been talking about, the homeless issue with sleeping and camping bans. And I wanted to announce, or you could announce, that we have made awards, cash awards, to two attorneys and three plaintiffs. And, of course, Free Radio Santa Cruz is going to get a cash or a money donation for their work in the community and keeping the news on the air that we would not normally hear or see in the talk shows. We would not normally hear or see if the corporate media had complete control of Santa Cruz airways. But thanks to Free Radio Santa Cruz, my voice has been heard several times. The issues around homelessness have been heard multiple times. And I don't know, you want me to give the names? And
Sure. I mean, I should say, for those who just tuned in, this is Bob Patton of the Human Rights Organization, who's also big in trying to defend the rights of vets, many of whom are homeless in Santa Cruz, and who has for a decade, about a decade, the Human Rights Organization formed in, what, 2000, 2001, thereabouts?
Yeah, I think it was August 2001, and so it's been 8 or 9 years.
And I know the reason it's no longer functioning anymore is because you and Bernard Klitzner, Bashful Bernard, as I like to call him, Bernard's moved to Las Vegas to play the horses. You know,
yeah, he may be listening. So, hi Bernard, if you're listening to this,
hey, or Bernard,
pick this up on the internet. I have taken care of business here, and to those who have received our awards, and I'd like to name those.
Please.
The two attorneys, Jonathan Gettleman, who did defend two campers. Heard their name was Anna Richardson and Miguel
De Leon.
Oh, okay.
Like Miguel De Leon, actually. Is
yeah, sorry. I may have the spelling wrong, too.
No problem.
I did talk to Jonathan Gettleman, and he's going to make sure that the contact is made with them. He says they're back in town. So Anna and Miguel, if you're listening, see Jonathan about your part of the award. And the other attorney was Ed Fry, who did a great service to Sharon Pape, who is a car camper. And it took quite a while for this case to get to the courts.
And Ed, as I mentioned right before you came on, Bob, you may not have heard, is also defending the case of Robert Facer.
Oh, I did hear the beginning of that. Then I decided
that's going
to
be Tuesday,
you
know, next Tuesday.
Relevant, but yes, thank you, Ed. Your check is in the mail.
All right. Of course, you will be sending me my finder's fee for finding all these people for you.
Oh yeah, definitely. What should we send you? 25 cents.
There you go, a quarter. But give me, I hear you give no quarter. But
And so, anyways, that's what I told you when we started the human rights organization, that there was nobody I'd like better than you to report on the demise of the, or the failure of, not the failure, but the demise of the human rights organization.
No, not a failure at all. I think the human rights organization, I mean, I could go through numerous projects. You met weekly. You were accessible to homeless people out at the homeless service center week after week. You assisted many people with their citations and tickets. You were instrumental, you and Bob and others involved with the human rights organization, in working on two separate lawsuits, both of which never came to fruition. But we have seen that in other cities they have, against the enforcement of laws that criminalize people for sleeping at night when there's no legal shelter. Most recently, the Jones decision provided some backing for this. But you, Bob, spent many hours, if not dozens or even more, I don't know how many, I would say hundreds of hours if you look at the last 9 years, on this issue. And so I think, you know, you've laid the groundwork, and other people have got to take up the shovel, so to speak, and start doing the planting and who knows what else.
Right. There's just times when you've got to move on to other things. And like you mentioned, I feel like I can make some degree of change for a maybe smaller population of homeless people, and that's in the veterans community. So, you know, I've been working from within that confines.
I know you worked to help Robert Hutchinson Hutch, who I actually ran into on the street today in his battle to be able to use the bathrooms at the vets hall, which he's apparently now able to do. Goodwin, Thomas Goodwin also.
Thomas Goodwin, yes.
I know Hutch has actually reported today that he had his wrist broken by a deputy sheriff 3 weeks ago when he was arrested for, being in on a beach after hours.
I didn't know that.
I don't know if it's true. That was his account. He showed me. He was pretty articulate and specific about it. He was not intoxicated at the time. This was earlier this afternoon. I didn't have my tape recorder with me, so I'm just kind of passing on the account.
Well, that's too bad that he ran into some physical abuse like that. There's no sense in breaking a frail. You know, the guy probably doesn't weigh 150 pounds.
He didn't want to follow their authority. He wanted to follow their orders, so they were going to show him who's boss.
Well, yeah, that's
by his account.
That's almost the same thing that goes on with the homeless when it comes to the city council's decisions. They just step on them.
And
who cares about rights and even respect or even compassion? I mean, I see no compassion in that city council for the plight of homeless people. If you don't have any compassion, you aren't going to be able to understand.
Yeah, period. They've given authorization to the police to jail people, or actually the city attorney to prosecute people who are unable to or unwilling to attend to three of their citations, which you can get cited for anything ranging from juggling in the wrong spot to sitting next to a building to pushing the pendulum, which of an art display that's actually meant to be pushed, to, of course, sleeping at night. And those two of those people that you gave the award to, Anna and Miguel, who I saw last night, and they were again being hustled around by Officer Winston, threatening them with this injunction that they have been charged with, even though the injunction just says they can't sleep downtown. He was saying, you can't play here, you can't be here. And that kind of coercion and intimidation, which, you know, I think officers like to be able to use, not necessarily because they're sadistic, though in some cases I think that's true, but because they want to. The feeling of power of moving people along is, I think kind of irresistible. Maybe to many of us. Maybe it's something we all should be aware of. I don't think it's because, you know, necessarily Officer Winston or any of these other people are bad human beings.
You know, there's so much hateful rhetoric around the issues from our leadership, from the council, and from city leaders, whether they be council or business people, that is absolutely destructive to a community. It emboldens those that have less morals or less consideration, less respect for, you know, human diversity. To the point to where I can't say we have, you know, troll busters running around freely, but attacks on homeless
increased.
People
I'm
almost
afraid
like a class
troll busting
reaction, you know, to this hateful kind of
rhetoric
that comes out of leadership.
I think troll busting has increased. I've gotten increased reports of gangs, what's called the East Side Gang, coming to New Leaf, beating up people and telling them to leave town, mainly because you don't live here, we don't want you here, that sort of thing. We're talking with Bob Patton of the Human Rights Organization, which is taking its final bow here. And I guess if anybody, Huff is presumably going to get the final records of the Human Rights Organization, which has all the dirt on Mayor Matthews. Is that correct?
Absolutely. You know, you might as well.
All the scandal, all the the interesting behind the scenes. Actually, I've got no particular allegations against Mayor Matthews, other than the obvious, which is that she's. And I hate to say this, kind of a tight-ass mayor who, that's my perception of her, who, you know, we don't call her 3-Minute Matthews, actually 2-Minute Matthews for nothing. You know, she She has a prefabricated agenda at City Council, which does not include any acknowledgement of human rights for the homeless, and which, in fact, involved driving away homeless people, and does involve driving away homeless people from, for example, the Red Church and the Monday coffee house that Father Joel throws there every Monday, and that at Ron A., who now serves on the streets instead of at the church because she finds it too repressive, used to provide a sort of a community for young people there. Matthews owns property across the street, and she and others have reportedly been cracking down on people just sort of just relaxing on the grass. We fought this successfully in the Jack's hamburger struggle, where Jack's was turning people away. We protested. Jack's backed up and said, okay, you know, we'll serve people. We said, right on.
Oh, good. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that's... You've been listening to my show here.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You're a bad boy.
Busy guy.
Well, thanks for calling
anything,
in.
But, yeah, I appreciate you letting me make that announcement, and thanks to all the people that came to our meetings and supported us, donations. We did receive quite a bit of support from the community. Unfortunately, not enough during the times of the Jones decision suits we were trying to bring forward. So thanks to all of them. Everybody keep involved, keep active, and we'll try to bring some clarity to this community one way or another through the courts or through demonstrations. I mean, lobbying your politicians in this town is nearly an impossible thing. It's a very closed system.
I would suggest cream pies and shoes. Shoes.
There you go.
Yeah, we can follow the lead of Al-Zedi, the now famous Iraqi patriot, who threw two shoes at President Bush.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he couldn't get close to President Obama because apparently by that time Al-Zedi was in jail and Obama was blathering about a useless health program, or health medical program that doesn't really deal with the issues anyway, and escalating the war in Iraq and Afghanistan.
I've always been a real student of the American Revolution. You can call me an American supporter. I think democracy is the best way to go that I can see in any way, shape, or form. And I think in that respect, the Bill of Rights, which is supposed to be the underpinning document on rights, has been completely abandoned and even damaged the concepts of it, damaged by the laws that are made by this City Council, and I've been called on that by former Mayor Rotkin,
Rotkin. He'll be mayor next month. So.
I stand by that. What he has done and what this community has done with their ordinances has brought damage to our rights, our civil rights.
And thanks, Bob, for the fight that you've been doing, and I think you'll probably continue to do, to overturn this stuff. And really, we have to overturn it on the streets. Unfortunately, there's no way to really do it legislatively at the moment, and judicially, well, in theory, it could be done judicially. We'll have to see. I appreciate your call, and any final words?
No, thanks to you, and you've always been supportive, attended many of our meetings, and inspired us on some of our actions. So thanks to you, and thanks to the community.
Thank you, Bob.
Good night.
Good night. And that was Bob Patton, and... I guess his last official statement as an HRO person, human rights organization, the organization that was met regularly and agitated for an end to the laws that criminalize homeless people in Santa Cruz, such as the sleeping ban, the sitting ban, the spare changing ban, the political tabling ban. I use the word ban in the sense that there are such severe restrictions that it becomes onerous to engage in these activities, and they are the restrictions are such as to actually constitute fundamental human rights violations and an attempt to make the town unsurvivable for poor and homeless people here, or to make it very difficult for them to survive. And that's my view. And what's your view? 427-3772 is the call-in number. 427-3772. Let's hear a song while we're waiting here.
Well, this song is dedicated to the so-called middle-class Negro. The Negro that have moved out of the ghetto,
out into the suburbs. The Negro that got up on the backs of his own black brothers. Sometimes these Negroes come to us up to us and say, what are you marching for? What you going to get out of marching? This is the message that we have for them, and these are the things that we tell them. We don't mind people laughing at the worn clothes we wear. We got everything when we got freedom on our mind now. You may laugh and have a bushy hair and the worn clothes we wear. We got everything when we got freedom, and you just a laughing fool. You may laugh at the holes in my past, but finance, I haven't had a chance. But we got everything when we got freedom, and you just a laughing fool. Wait a minute. You may laugh at the holes in my shoes. You may buy clothes and shoes brand new, but we got everything when we got freedom, and you just a laughing fool. You may laugh at us inside when you see us going by, but you're enjoying some of the freedom that we have died for. Yes, sir. Wait a minute. You know they stabbed Dr. King from this house and everything. I heard him say, you know it's true. Forgive them, Jesus. For they know not what they do. He had everything when he had freedom. And you just a laughing fool. For example, Mick Evers and Emmett Till were two examples of courage and will. They had everything when they had freedom on their mind now. Look here, but when segregation is broken down, you will see every home in town sitting at lunch counters, smoking big cigars and saying, look what we have done. Trying to take the credit from dead heroes molded in the grass. But they laugh at our bushy hair and the worn clothes we wear. We got everything, we got freedom, and you just a laughing fool.
And that was called You're Just a Laughing Fool. Sung by Reverend Frederick Douglass Kirkpatrick with Jim Collier on vocal and guitars. The song from the repertoire of Collier and Kirkpatrick prepared for the Poor People's Campaign. They discovered that using the sound and beat of rhythm and blues was effective with inner city audiences, and the Poor People's Campaign was what Martin Luther King was doing when he got shot, and that some folks carried on with, and it didn't have a remarkably successful conclusion in the sense of big legislative gains, but people have continued to struggle. And oftentimes, as things sink to the right, that is to say, where climate becomes less compassionate, community is more isolated from each other, where the rich become celebrated and the poor become despised, you have to remember what the issues and the principles are, and I guess that's kind of what I'm doing in these hard times. What are you doing? Give a call. 427-3772 is the number. My name is Robert Norse, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides at 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. Let's hear some more interviews from the street in downtown Santa Cruz.
We're having a conversation with a man who's actually carrying his bagage with him. Your name again?
My name is Christopher.
And Christopher, you yourself have been sitting with a sign that says, need food for money?
Correct.
And you say that there a lot of college students are back today, hence no busts by police?
Oh, no, no police at all, because that would just taint the whole atmosphere that brought them all here. See, we can't have that. We can't have them thinking there's any problems around here, right? Especially until the parents get out of town, drop them off and get out of town. Then, next weekend, probably be a different story.
So, you actually have seen police walking around doing nothing, or you just haven't
seen
police?
They're gone. They can't even be seen, because such would ruin the environment. It would ruin the flavor of the place.
So this is your analysis, or you have some inside information from man inside?
My inside information is 25 years of being here and being here a lot when the school comes back. It's just experience. This is the way it works. Anytime they got to hide, you know, from any segment of society that there might be problems here, the police are gone. And the first day back for school, that's one of those times when they know the parents are going to be here, they know everybody's going to be watching, they disappear. They're gone. You can do anything you want. You can
Let's
violate anything.
Let's see if we get confirmation from another habitué.
Sure.
How's it going downtown?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. Slowly waking up here. The dusk is falling, and you're beside a recycling bin, which is actually next to the. Actually, it's a trash can, not a recycling bin.
Yeah.
It would be illegal to sit next to a recycling bin or within 10 feet.
Right. Yeah, I read the brochure.
And you are.
Actually, it's within 14 feet if you're sitting or 10 feet if you have a political table. Let's keep that in mind.
You have your sleeping gear with you. You have a sign, Travel Inc., broke, hungry, please help. Are people broke? You're broke, but are people helping you?
A couple people have helped, yeah.
And are the police helping you with citations and gentle move-along orders?
Not yet.
And how long have you been out here today?
About 30 minutes.
And are you a regular person on the street here doing this, or is this a new experience?
I just got here like 2 weeks ago. I'm looking for.
How's Santa Cruz treating you?
Nice.
Do I get a hug?
Yeah, I saw you at the drum circle before. Thanks.
I got a great hug there, folks. All right. And we've been talking with?
Angela.
Thanks, Angela. The man who's actually heard me on the radio, in your opinion, sir, oh, come on, don't be shy. We need some pot. No, he's not going to inflate my ego further, but he found it was okay.
I got to think of how it was. It was a levity moment. And you said something.
It was just yesterday.
But you liked what I said. He's a man of gentle words who doesn't really want to, you know, spoil me with too much praise, but thank you for that thought. Any reports from the street that you want to give? No. Okay. We haven't determined if there are fewer or more police on the streets, which seemed to be the initial question. I let myself get, sidetracked. But I've walked the avenue here for a few minutes, haven't seen any police. But then again, that's often the case. Police show up in squad cars, often in multiple numbers, and that's when they ship. Not necessarily by being around on foot. Quick report here again from in front of Verizon. We have a nice sign, homeless, hungry, old dog needs a few bones. People, food, okay, please help, have a good day. But not a lot of money coming in, as I understand it. And this, of course, is a repeat interview. And we've been talking with...
Eddie.
And Eddie, how long have you been doing this now, today?
Today? 6 hours.
And no hassles from the cops?
No.
Have you seen a cop today?
No.
Yeah, I haven't either. I'm wondering if somebody says because of all the students on the street.
But they, hospitality.
A lot of hospitality. No hassles, though, with hospitality.
No.
And,
and by hospitality, we're talking about the... Bumblebees, or yellow jackets, actually, who kind of are the eyes and ears of the police force in downtown Santa Cruz, who warn people to move along, and if they don't, call the police or issue, they act as complainants themselves, and then the police give the citations.
Have you found that hospitality has generally been pretty mellow? Or
yes.
Okay. Well, these are the folks with the yellow and black jackets. I call them yellow jackets at times. Thank you, Ed. Anything you want to say for free radio?
No.
All right, man. Appreciate your taking the time. But, of course, after dark, what Eddie is doing is illegal. He is seeking money with a sign, even though he's saying nothing and sitting quietly, not obstructing any traffic. Under the new Coonerty, I should say the old Coonerty laws, which were upgraded in 2002 after being initially passed in 1994. Having any sign out seeking money or asking for anything of change after dark anywhere in the city in a public place is illegal.
Yeah.
That's called not a violation of the First Amendment, but a time, place, and manner. We have another couple here who live in their vehicle, but the problem they've been having is not with the property tender or the shopkeeper, but apparently with the landlord, because apparently from two different pieces of property they've been told they had to have to move their vehicle, even had the police called on them, even though they got permission of the person who is managing the property, but not apparently the owner. So that becomes a problem.
What's up,
as well,
man?
And they're not giving us a report at this time, but that seems to be the situation from the street.
And
that's how it is. We're talking with... got an anonymous report from three people who don't want to be identified that there's a kind of a war on the street. Kids started yesterday, or at least probably before yesterday, but it took place yesterday at least in front of New Leaf, around dark. Five, I guess we're talking men in cars, showed up, young men.
On foot
showed up, sorry. And I'm talking to a guy who got a black eye because of it. He said this has happened five or six times, that there's a sort of a war on street kids by other folks who perhaps themselves had previously been on the streets, but now are in houses. I think that's impression I get. And this has happened a number of times, and happens around dark. It's a report from three young people who are very wary of being identified, and I'm giving you this report from the Pacific Trading Company on Pacific Avenue, and it's about... Have a good night, you guys. About 7:25 evening on Saturday evening. So there you have it. Anonymous report by three youths. We're talking youths. Late teens, early 20s. And there appears to be a little music on the streets in front of New Leaf. We have a crowd of onlookers, or on-listeners, listening to an accordion man and a violin artist. Quick report from the streets that the police were, you said, busting camps?
They were busting camps that night, the camps they knew about, because of the O'Neill's window shop was broken down or something. Somebody had...
This is a secondhand story. You actually didn't see any of it, but you heard about it?
I saw it. It was all broken. There was police in front of it.
What time was that?
Between 11 and 2, I can say. I don't know exactly what time.
Late, around midnight?
Yeah.
On Friday night?
Midnight, yeah.
And how many police were involved?
Excuse me?
How many police officers were there?
I saw about three.
And we're talking, I believe this is 2 weeks ago, Saturday night, 2 weeks ago, as being where this report is coming from. This is a Saturday report. See, today is Sunday the 1st. Yesterday was the 30th Saturday, so it would have been the 16th, September 16th, something like that. Actually, I'm a little bit confused. It's Thursday, not Sunday. I've got a Sunday show, too. So actually, it's somewhat later than that. But we're talking about Saturday 2 weeks ago, sounds like.
And did you see them questioning people about the window breaking, or were they doing some other kind of harassment going on?
I also heard some people saying that the cops have been trying to find out if people had, I guess, skateboards or something like that. Somebody has said that. Because they had taken items out of the stuff.
Be careful.
Thank you.
Free sample is being given even as we speak. I'm good. My hands are full, but I appreciate that. Thank you.
I'll take
you. She can have mine. And we've been talking with?
Teresa.
Thank you, Teresa. And we have the Mad Musical Duo, Vision Song Valerie and Merriweather Mike. They're performing next to a fire hydrant in front of IQ, the famous, and logos.
That's the safest place in town.
leaning your guitar against public property, Vision Song Valerie?
Only for my massage, yeah. I'm massaging my neck because it hurts. But, I'm aware of the public property leaning bullshit.
Yeah. Actually, yes, that's only... No, I'm not sure about that, actually. You, on the other hand, Merriweather, have your usual well-attired bike with keyboard and percussion thingy with harmonica and engineer's cap. Or is it caboose cap? I heard a report from the street just recently about some sort of gang fighting going on downtown between groups trying to get rid of young people downtown. Is there any truth to that? You know, have you heard any reports?
Oh, there might have been an incident off and on. I haven't.
Something about an O'Neill's window also being broken.
Whoa, didn't know about that yet.
And I didn't really notice it as I walked by O'Neill's, but then I didn't really look at the window, so what can I say? It's just a report I just got.
Well, you know, it's time to do a homeless issue song when Robert shows up.
That's right. We got to stay focused. Hocus pocus, watch our focus.
Here you go, folks. There's a little musical interlude here on the street.
When you're alone and rents are making you homeless, you can always go downtown. When you get laid off, all the cops and their friends will move you to and fro downtown. Try to find musicians who can tolerate the city. Linger on the sidewalk and the police will say, no sitting. How can you win? The fines are much higher there. They have forgotten you live here, forgotten they care when you're downtown. There's lots of hate for you downtown. Well, it's not so great for you downtown. Tickets are waiting for you downtown. Again, the crowds are much wider there. They walk past all of your troubles, step over your cares when you're downtown. With all the shops uptight downtown, lit up so rich and bright downtown, uniforms watching for you.
Wait. I'm having an anonymous report from a guy who was a witness to, on two successive nights, Friday night and Thursday night, it sounds like, around slightly after dark, young backpackers, kind of the kids usually find around New Leaf, two or three of them were hanging, or a number of them were hanging out in front of New Leaf, and then five or six, what this individual describes as thugs, showed up and told them, this is our town, you got to get out of town, we're the West Siders, the East Siders, sorry. And that, you know, and apparently some fights actually happened, I heard from other sources. According to this source, last night these thugs, as this guy describes them, beat, quote, the shit out of two kids. And then he said it was strange that though a number of people apparently were calling the police on cell phones, police did not show up either for an hour before or an hour after. An hour before, I can understand, but not an hour after. One cop did drive by an hour later, but didn't show up for the actual brutality, which went on for, I'm going to ask, for how long? About 5 minutes. And did anybody, I'm going to ask my source here, did anybody try to intervene? No, nobody tried to intervene. Nobody had video cameras. Other kids ran into boarders who were with them. Back up their friends or the people maybe they just met. Who knows? Source here has seen the six East Siders, or seven or eight East Siders, how many, four or five East Siders show up on two successive nights, and on both those nights, no police were present, but was there violence? I'm going to ask him, on both nights or just on one, on both nights? So apparently on Thursday night, they roughed up one kid around the corner on Soquel and Pacific on the side street, but last night it was actually done in front of New Leaf more publicly, and two kids were beaten up, so there seems to be a growing violent attempt to, if this is an accurate report, and I've heard this not just from this source, but also from other sources, drive people out of the area. If you hear anything about this, please give a call to Free Radio, 427-3772, or to HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
And as usual, we're a bit late with this kind of account. This was 2 weeks ago, Saturday before last, actually. Got an account from one of the victims that he was assaulted on that side street, punched six or seven times in the eye, told to get out of town. I know this person. He does not want to have his name mentioned on the air, although he gave me an interview, which I recorded, and I'm hoping he will allow me to play it at some future time. He was genuinely frightened, intimidated. The same people who had hit him, he said, were still wandering around, going to public places, and he was concerned that they were likely to attack him again. So this has been a concern of mine for the last couple of weeks to see what's going on with this, whether there's a concerted campaign. But when I talk to people on the streets, very few people, other than the people I spoke with on this occasion, and there were a number of them, and you'll hear some more of them, know about it, and it has apparently not continued this way, although I've heard more reports of police brutality in the last few weeks. You may recall last Sunday, I played Tom Preston's account, being brutalized by Officer Winston, Medina, Hodgkiss, and Hatch, I believe, among, it may have been other officers, according to Preston's account. And then he was shortly thereafter picked up by Preston, by Winston, after he'd given me this interview. I actually had brief words with Officer Winston last night, asking him if there was any truth to the brutality concerns. He said, oh, no, not at all, but he didn't stay to give me any details. Too busy writing citations for panhandling and harassing musicians into leaving the areas they were trying to play music in front of New Leaf late at night. So I don't have a lot of updates on this right now, but I hope that folks out there do. If you've been yourself brutalized, abused, or if you've witnessed any of this, please give a call to the station, 427-3772. I'd like to hear from you. Or if you don't want to be public about it at this point, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Leave a message for me. I'll get back to you, or just leave an account of what happened when. I'm also going to be leaving a notebook at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 703 Pacific, the Sub Rosa Cafe, where you can write down your account, and I will put it up on IndieBay, if you'd like, the website where I've been in the past posting a lot of stories about protests that we've been doing against discriminatory businesses and bad police behavior downtown. Again, that's Sub Rosa Cafe, 703 Pacific. The notebook should be available soon there. Just ask them where to find it, and then you can write your account, or you can go online. They have computers there, and simply write up your account. I know some folks like to use the library, but often there's kind of a backup there, and you might find a similar problem at the Sub Rosa, but they're pretty mellow about it, about allowing access to their computers, particularly, I think, if you're trying to do something, which I think is a service to the community, to let people know what's happening on the streets, what's happening to you or to people you know out there. So, let's hear some more interviews.
Pretty a drug thing, he says, because rather than simply a homeless or a get-out-of-town-to-newcomers thing, because apparently there were, as my source describes it, East Sider kids here that were left alone, who these five people, the so-called thugs, arriving, and by the way, if any East Siders want to call in and give their side of the story, you have an opportunity to do so. The number to call is 427-3772. But this was the perception of my source, that there was a beating up, sort of a, you know, 5-on-1, 3-on-1, 4-on-1, 2-on-1. And then the other night, 5-on-2 that happened the other night. So that's why I use the word thugs, because it sounds like thuggery. But the question may also be some kind of a drug thing, and that's another issue about drug territory. Well, let's ask this newcomer what his perspective is.
Humbug.
Now, tell me, Uncle Larry, have you seen any violence on the streets the last two nights down here?
I did not.
Well, that's good, because my source just said there's a bunch of East Side individuals coming and beating up kids in front of New Leaf.
I did not see that.
Well, why not? I want you to keep an eye open, Larry.
I will watch more closely at New Leaf.
All right, there you go. Thank you.
I promise.
All right. If this doesn't work, we're going to get Tim Bratton out here, okay? I also get the report from my confidential source that he suspects, or she suspects, I'm not going to say whether it's a she or a he, that the individuals who are coming in and doing the intimidating and the beatings are in collusion with, or maybe closely associated with, the police, somewhat similar to the late 70s Trollbusters, and actually also into the 80s Trollbusters, people who... essentially drive away folks from the downtown area. I've seen some of the commentary on Sentinel website, which talks about let's get together and run these people out of town, but I've always dismissed it as bravado and just sort of, you know, blah, 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 bullshit. But it looks like there's some actual violence happening down here. I've gotten this report not just from the source who I mentioned, but as you earlier heard, some kids themselves, one of whom had a black eye, who described he was one of the people who was victimized. Although he did not want to be recorded, did not want to be on tape, and my source does not want to be on tape because he says he's vulnerable. He's out here and he's facing brutality and retaliation if he, you know, speaks up too clearly and it can be identified. Naturally, I'll be turning his name into the police later. My source feels that these folks were, should we say, backed by the police or had some arrangement with them, was that they seemed too confident and too arrogant, not worried about being seen. Now, I would think that with this being the video camera era, they would be worried about, you know, having some video evidence against them because there's video surveillance in this area, I believe. It's my suspicion, though. You know, I think there used to be a camera in front of New Leaf years ago, and there probably are even more cameras even now. Additionally, my source says there were many students on the streets last night, as there are tonight, the UCSC having resumed session, calling the police, many cell phone calls in, and no police arriving. So, doesn't sound good to me. Yet another addition to this story, my source says it felt eerie from his position near the Del Mar Theater that she or he watched from, where you... He said, normally there are a lot of police, not so much on foot, but driving by in their vehicles. And for an hour before, there were no police at all. Although I'm down here, and I sometimes I see police driving by frequently. Sometimes I don't see them at all. So I don't know. But the feeling of my source here is that was a sort of an eerie situation. He had a kind of a strange feeling about it, or she did, or whoever it was. One way to find out this would be, of course, to get a record of 9/11 calls from Pacific Avenue between the hours of, 7:30 and 9:30 last night. And just so you be aware, this is not simply a thug report. We're also having a little music in front of the Del Mar Cafe in a new and newly enclosed area next to the Del Mar Theater. At the time is about, I think we're getting into the 8 o'clock, 8:15 zone here. To check my questionable watch, and we find it is about 8:10. One of my sources, you wish to give your name?
Jasmine.
Hey, Jasmine. And so you're, how long have you been in Santa Cruz?
My entire life. I was born down the street.
Let me turn down the sound here. Or should I say turn down the speed? Now we're playing at a slower speed. Jasmine, you say that you're aware of the violence that's happened here on the front of New Leaf the last couple nights?
Yes, absolutely.
Describe what you've seen.
I've seen two groups of people fighting in the street in a very, very...
She's at a loss for words, folks.
Yeah.
How long did the whole thing take? Let's say, were you here both nights?
No, I was here the first night. The second night, I chose to be in a different area because I knew that the same thing would be happening.
So what did you observe that first night? Thursday night, we're talking about the 8th, the 17th, I see.
Probably, yeah.
Today is the 19th.
Yes. What I observed?
What did you see?
A bunch of people, the majority of them being underage from different areas here, homeless, sleeping outside, some of them being older, ages ranging from 29 to 16 years old, talking on the streets and gathering and talking and speaking about their day.
At what time was it?
I would say midnight to 1. That's my guesstimation.
Okay, and so then what happened?
A group of people came up and...
On foot or in vehicles?
On foot, and asked them to leave. Told them to leave, asked specific people out of the group who they were not familiar with as being local to go away and not be in town because of their concern of drug sales in an open way to where children are exposed to it and because of trash everywhere and because of disrespect to people walking on the streets.
So they were figuring that there'd be midnight drug sales to young children in front of New Leaf.
No, but I think it was previous actions that had made them upset. I'm not entirely sure. I don't agree with violence in any way. I just do not. I don't feel as if anyone's actions on either side should be justified. It's very sad that people have come to the point where they feel it necessary to be violent to one another, but I don't know what to do but give hugs to both sides because I feel that people need to be healed.
Where were you located when this was happening? Where were you standing or sitting?
I was standing on the side of New Leaf.
And how far away were you from this interaction?
About 5 feet.
And how many people were involved? How many people came up and were making these get out of town kind of? Is that fair to say that's what they said, or what did they say?
That's almost verbatim.
And how many were doing this?
At the time, only three, but there's many more.
And why do you say that?
That is my feeling.
These people, were they well-dressed? How were they dressed? Making the threat.
In a very neutral way, the opposite of homeless, in a way to where they would not be easily identified in any form. You could not easily identify them. They blend in very well.
And what was the response of the folks sitting down, the homeless folks?
Silence.
And
some bickering and some, you know, of course, back and forth argument.
But they didn't come up to you and make these threats or make these demands?
No, because I'm recognized as someone that was born and raised in this area and has respect for people around me. I don't know the actions of the other people. They could have been completely respectful. I don't know. I'm uninvolved.
And for how long did this interaction happen?
15 minutes about, I'd say.
And so you said the people who were told to leave, were they selected out of a group of people, or was a group of people addressed as a group?
It was hard to say, but I feel as if definitely specific people were called for.
Were they mentioned by name, or were they just...
No, it was more of a hey you and a recognition through that.
And how many people would you say were so designated?
Three or four.
And you say they were silent, but then eventually something else happened?
Yeah, argument between two people, get out of town, no, fuck you, you can't tell me what to do, who are you, this and that and the other.
And then what happened?
Fists were thrown, people were thrown around, people were kicked in the face, a fight broke out, and people got very seriously injured.
And were other people out watching this, or was this sort of an isolated scene? Were there many other people on the street?
No, there was not very many people on the street.
And were any police around?
No, there were no police around. They came shortly afterwards, which I completely detached myself from the situation, gave no information, and left.
And how many police were involved?
Four or five.
And they came fairly soon after the incident?
Yes, very, very soon, less than 5 minutes. Someone up from the bars across the street had called.
And was anybody taken to the hospital? Was an ambulance called?
No, not to my knowledge. I'm pretty sure not.
And this was all on Thursday night?
Yes.
And have you seen or heard of any other incidents happening of this kind in the last few days?
Yes.
When and where was that?
Same area, same...
Where we're standing now?
Yes, around this area, of course, all up and down Pacific Avenue. I don't know specifically individuals involved with one another that this is happening with, but it appears to be people... I don't feel comfortable with saying the source, but it's people who are from the area, from attacking people who are not from the area and homeless.
And this, have you heard of the police and being involved in any way in supporting one side or the other?
Not that I've seen, but I would not expect them to support anyone who's from out of town and homeless because I've not seen them make those actions previously.
Okay. We've been talking with?
Jasmine.
Thank you, Jasmine, and you may have a hug at any time.
Oh, thank you. I love you very much.
Thank you. Now we have the man who's going to resolve everything. Your name, sir?
I don't want to use my name.
We have an anonymous man, but unfortunately a recognizable voice. Are you sure you want to speak?
I don't know.
You're pointing to your right eye, which is blackened. Tell me.
And this man's account I'm not going to play right now because after having made it, he requested that I not play it. So let's have a brief musical break while I... spin forward.
Time is running out.
And that was Wendy Smith. Time is running out again from Broadsides. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert. This is Bathroom Spears Broadsides, your station. And your 50 cents if you want to call in, 427-3772. A couple of quick updates. Let me take a look over here. Actually, is the mic high enough? I hope so. Without the feedback, hopefully. Let's see here how we're doing. I'll try and use this. This mic is a little better. I read you a story from Vancouver. Here is a story from Seattle. Nicholsville residents vow to stay at Port of Seattle Park. This is a story from two or three days ago by West Raven in the Seattle Post-Globe. As another group of homeless people prepared to sleep in front of Seattle City Council member Tim Burgess's home Tuesday night, the residents of the Nicholsville homeless encampment vowed to stay at a Port of Seattle Park, despite a deadline to leave on Wednesday. Nicholsville is a sort of a protest city, a protest tent city up in Seattle, supported by the longtime sort of social service slash homeless encampment called Tent City 4 up in Seattle, which is a sort of a combination emergency shelter, homeless run. I'm not quite sure if it's entirely homeless run, but it's supported in part by social service funding up there. But it's the kind of thing that I've been encouraging Santa Cruz authorities to do, or Santa Cruz homeless people and homeless supporters to do, is set up a tent city here in Santa Cruz, simply for survival, protection, community. Anyway, here's more from this story. Nicholsville's been around for a while, I think a year at least, kind of like Hooverville's, the hobo tent cities that got sent up, and shack villages that got set up in the Depression. We're in the middle of another Depression, of course, and naturally people are going to shelter themselves as best they can. And as I was saying earlier, there is zero walk-in emergency shelter tonight in Santa Cruz. So people have no choice but to sleep out where they are victimized and brutalized, in some cases, by the police, according to accounts that I've been getting. Anyway, up in Seattle, Nicholsville spokesman Rebel Smith said in a press conference that police are expected to arrive at Terminal 107 Park at noon on Wednesday to evict the encampment, set up in part as a protest that not more is done by Seattle about homelessness. Nickelodeons who plan, that means like Nicholsville people, who plan, not people who are fans of the movies down here, or movie theaters that play them, Nickelodeons who plan to stay and peacefully stand up to removal by police will ultimately risk arrest, the statesman said. Port spokeswoman Charla Skagg said the port is hoping the encampment will leave. Just leave, leave. We remain hopeful that Nicholsville members will leave voluntarily by tomorrow's deadline. Certain area churches have said they are available to help if Nicholsville requests that help. We hope that a safe, legal alternative location will be found, she said. Of course, the churches are unwilling to provide, and perhaps unable to provide, the amount of support that's necessary to provide shelter for people who need it, who are outside. And instead, the police cite them, harass them, drive them away. And therefore, even though a small number of protesters may be issued shelter temporarily by a church, it's mainly a way of breaking the protest and stopping the visible demonstration that embarrasses the city mothers and fathers, similar to what was happening in Sacramento on attorney Mark Maron's property, which I talked about a couple weeks ago, where a protest encampment was set up there. The encampment has been at Terminal 107 of the Duwamish River since July 23rd, after being kicked off State Transportation Department property in South Seattle. The Post-Globe is the only news organization to accompany the encampment during the move. Here's the story. On August 25th, though, the port gave the encampment until September 30th. It said at the time, the port has no authority to provide temporary housing. The Shoreline Park is an inappropriate location for the encampment, and the camp violates Seattle City Code. Port officials reiterated their hope that encampment members and advocates will continue efforts to find an appropriate site for the group, and they will leave the port voluntarily. Meanwhile, Burgess posted on her Facebook page, "I'm experiencing the reality of our freedom to protest and petition the government." And here's another story, again, in the Post-Globe. About 40 protesters appear to have been bedded down for the night. This was yesterday. On the quiet West Seattle street where Mayor Greg Nickels lives. I guess that's why I call it Nicholsville, because Mayor Nickels in Seattle is Mayor Nickels. Earlier in the evening at about 8:30, the homeless men and women protesting the city's denial of funding for bus vouchers had walked through the neighborhood in the drizzle. Once at Nickels Street, they laid out the tarps and mats they carried on the grassy parking strip. Nickels, though, has a flower bed in front of his house, preventing the protesters from actually sleeping in front of his home, unless, of course, they want to crush the flowers, which they would never do. The protesters were actually in front of four of Nickels' neighbors' houses. In Nickels' home, the lights in the main room facing the street were out, but the lights were on in a side window behind drawn blinds. The protest was going on without incident Monday night. Several police officers stood by while most of the protesters lay on their bedding. Most action came from the TV crews conducting interviews. The protesters planned to sleep Tuesday night in front of a city council member's home. And then here's the update on that. Some people camped out overnight outside the home of Seattle City Councilman Tim Burgess in the Queen Anne neighborhood up in Seattle. The Tuesday night campers are members of the group Share, who also camped out Monday night outside Mayor Greg Nickels' home demanding more free bus fares from the city. A homeless camp on the Port of Seattle property, mentioned in the first story, is facing eviction at noon Wednesday. I will be able to find that out. Let me go online while I'm doing a little playing some interviews as we proceed here and give you the update there. And a spokeswoman for the camp called Nicholsville says it will stand up to the police. And that's the update from Seattle. Let's hear some more interviews from the street. And actually, what I'm going to play now, the person who is being interviewed isn't the individual that I thought who didn't want the interview played. Instead, I'm going to play it because there's no objection to this interview being played, as I understand it. And you're also going to hear a dialogue with a man named Steve, who I initially thought was making hostile comments about homeless people who were sort of lingering. And he and I got into an exchange, a verbal exchange, which ultimately had a very interesting result. And he actually called my show a couple weeks ago. And you can actually go back and check archived shows if you're a true aficionado of this show, if you really like it. And you can actually review. We had a very positive interaction ultimately, but it began with an argument. So sometimes you work out the strong feelings and you get some better feelings, and that you have to somehow break through barriers to get this kind of contact. At least that can happen. Let's hear some more interviews from the street. Again, I was investigating the whether anybody had seen the violence that happened on the evenings of it turned out to be Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday nights. There were reports of violence that week, 2 weeks ago. I think that was the 17th, 18th, and 19th, if I'm not mistaken, something like that. I may be off by a day. Anyway, this was a conversation. This took place in front of the New Leaf Market. I believe in the early evening, between 8:30 and 9 o'clock at night, when the whole area that is the fenced-off area, which would normally be a part of the sidewalk between the two green kiosks on the sidewalk, which are restaurant kiosks, which was supposed to be open to the public, have been chained off and have not been open to the public for about a year. And again, part of the city's move along people by denying them access to public space. So the rest of us were kind of crammed into the small area of about 10 feet between New Leaf and this green metal fence that's now an obstruction and a public nuisance on the sidewalk, but of course one which serves the convenience of some merchants.
I don't know. You're pointing to your right eye, which is blackened. Tell me about it.
Came out of nowhere, just crowd of people, and just started punching people, no warning.
When was this and where was it?
Wednesday night, front of New Leaf, like around the corner, like on the Soquel side. They're in a formation, in a line formation, flank people against the wall.
And how many were they?
6 or 7.
And about what time was it?
After midnight.
And was there any verbal exchange prior to or during that you remember?
Minimal.
And what happened specifically? You just simply got cold cocked and that was you got punched?
Yeah.
And what did you do then?
I left.
How many people were with you when this was happening?
There was a good there was a good 10 or 15 people. 10 or 15 people there.
Was anyone else hit?
Yeah.
And how many people do you estimate were injured?
3 or 4, maybe 5, I don't know.
And were the police involved? Did they show up? Did they take reports?
Not while I was there.
And how long did you stay there?
Not for very long.
And did you hear from anybody else any more details that you think might be useful in letting us know what went down?
Not that I want to talk about right now.
Okay, off tape.
Talk about it. What? Hey, you making a threat? Let's hear about it. Let's hear about your threat. What are you saying? What are you saying, sir? What are you saying? Something about a job? What? What did you say?
You don't want to speak for public. What's the problem?
Republican? Yeah, I'll speak
for
Republican.
Yourself.
Okay.
What did you say? For the public here.
You just said, why don't you get a job, and that's okay. I mean, that's an honest thing to say, but why don't you...
It's a free speech thing to say.
It is a free speech thing. So give me your opinion.
Just like your free speech thing to say, it's my free speech.
Of course it is. Of course
it is. It's called hate.
All right.
What's the beer sign in front of her face?
What gives you the right to walk back by nice people and in front of a child and say such hateful things?
She's
it's not
child
nice.
Right here.
Mom, okay, it is
speaking the truth.
It's hate. It is hate. It is hate in front of a little boy
talk,
and me.
Talk to her.
Talk to me. It was very rude and hateful what you just said. Okay, Jesus himself, if he was standing here, would set you straight, and he would let you know that.
Why do you think what he said was hateful? Can you clarify that?
Because it was just it was very rude. It wasn't nice.
Well, all the man said was it was his opinion that
because you said can't you get off the street and what do you mean you're on the street too?
Don't misconstrue.
Okay, so clarify what it was you were trying so we don't misunderstand.
Get a skill and get a job.
And that is, in fact, what he did say, as I recall. So that's,
you know. What is wrong with that?
What gives you the right to say that? How do you know that they don't have skills?
I'm raising my child to get a skill and a job
also. Do you know what this guy does for a living? Do you know what he is? You cannot look at somebody and judge them by the way that they look, even if they have no shoes on.
I entertain your ears and musical ability.
He's almost done with his bachelor's degree.
Okay, I hear you. I hear you. Let's not cast any stones here.
You're the one throwing the stones in my face. All I wanted to do was hang out and be nice to people.
You combined
negative attitude.
Were you talking to a particular individual? Were you concerned about a group of people? Were you talking to?
I was talking to my daughter.
So you actually weren't. You weren't actually addressing.
I wasn't directing it toward anybody.
Why didn't you look at us when you talked?
Yeah, you were looking
look
in our direction.
You.
Well, that might have been a misinterpretation. You might have thought he was looking at you. No,
he can easily use that as a defense.
And I'm not saying that you don't have they have the right to be offended. You have the right to say.
I don't believe your dad. But I would say it to my own father if he turned around and said that to a group of nice people, and I know these people. I'm not homeless and on the street.
Nice.
I have a job.
You? So you're
whatever.
Saying that you're not
no,
nice?
No, I didn't say that.
You're
don't put words
I'm,
in my mouth.
Not,
I'm saying if
I'm
it was my...
Nice.
No, that's not what I said.
Then what
my words
were,
if it was my father, I would tell my own father if he said that to a group of people or walking by a group of people who are hippies, who are homeless, but yet you're judging.
My dad says I say to with what he says, and I
would
do not judge what he
don't judge other people. Yet if you don't want to be judged. Judge and you will be judged.
Did he say it matters if you're judged?
He wasn't nice getting words out to the
he's
people.
He's offering
like
you some money.
I don't want your money.
It's a nice offer, though, and
I'm
I appreciate
really
that.
Sorry.
Thank you. He's offering $10.
I'm teaching my child is all I'm trying to do.
My God.
I don't hold any...
Yeah,
I understand.
Right.
You have to understand that the homeless people have been attacked here night after night, physically attacked by people who are saying, get out of town. And that's sort of the background.
Yeah, I didn't say that, though.
No, you didn't. But this is kind of the situation.
This is my child here, and I'm telling her, get a skill. Get an education.
Well, that's
all I'm saying.
That's good, but you were saying it to word at and out loud.
I think now I made that misinterpretation perhaps. I see. I thought that maybe you were addressing me or one of us in the group.
No, not at all.
And you're honest enough and courageous enough, because there are more people here than just the two of you, to talk to us. And so I think you're telling the truth, because you know why would you know you're willing
okay,
to talk.
I'm thank you very much. I appreciate your comment. I'm evil.
I don't think anyone here is evil. But I am concerned that there's a lot of violence that's happening against people who are poor at downtown, and I think sometimes people construe that they're here because they're lazy or because they don't have skills.
No, in fact, I'm a single father, and I live in an apartment, and I will never. I'm one paycheck away from being homeless, and I was born like that, and it's not going to change. And fortunately, I worked hard enough and learned a metal skill throughout time in Africa and biblical times, blacksmiths and metal workers, even through
hard times
and Nazism. All metal workers have been able to stay stable.
So you've got work yourself now.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
How's your foreclosure crisis isn't hitting you very hard?
No, like I said, I don't own a home. I'm just a simple guy that lives in a two-bedroom apartment I'm a single father.
And he's a good father.
Yeah.
What's your name?
Amanda.
And you are?
Steve.
And I'm Robert. So Steve,
nice
thank you for stopping
you.
To talk.
Yeah.
Amanda, thank you.
Yeah, I'm sorry for that. If there's something I can do to make the situation better.
You've already done it. You've talked about the situation. You've offered us some support, and we tried to clarify what went down. And, you know, sometimes misunderstandings happen, and that apparently is what happened here. And there's also, you know, people are crowded together in hard times, and they sometimes take it out on each other instead of the people who are creating the hard times.
Yeah, very passionate. I respect that. However, this is America, and we should be able to live where we want to live and be free who we want to be.
For sure.
And if we want to choose the politicians who we want to represent, we should be able to do that. I am Republican, and that doesn't mean I'm demeaning anybody else.
No, I wasn't criticizing you. Frankly, I don't like either the Republicans or the Democrats these days. That's
correct,
how I'm feeling.
Correct,
you know?
Yeah.
Thank you, Steve, and again...
Amanda.
And Steve did call in, I believe, the next day, which was a week and a half ago, when we had that show, and the tape is now finally being played, and perhaps by chance Steve may be listening now, although probably not. It was a while ago. Here's some more interviews from the street.
Well, we're downtown on Pacific Avenue. It's a sunny but thankfully not hot day, 15 to 2 on September 20th, 2009, in front of The Gap. I'm here with
Christopher Doyen.
Christopher, you have your setup all set. You're sitting on your backpack. Need food, please help. Your cartoon, The Stimulus, is working. They being announced by a... Obama in a clown's outfit, whereas from the gate, the plank of the, right over the moat of a castle, where the, underneath it, there's some homeless people barbecuing a dead cat under the
rat.
There you are.
And you Twitter?
I do not Twitter. I'm sorry. I babble, but I don't really Twitter. Just about 10 minutes ago, as the two of us drove across Pacific Avenue on Lincoln Street, what did I see to my left? But sitting in front of the Ohm Gallery was a tourist-looking fellow within 14 feet of a building, nay, actually right up against the building illegally. And then I saw a woman with a dog on a leash, but not a service dog, walking up Pacific Avenue crossing Lincoln Street. Now, interestingly enough, at the very same time, also crossing Lincoln Street in the opposite direction so that the officer could have a clear view of these two illegal acts, was Officer Albert. I asked the officer immediately from my car window to address these two crimes on the street, sitting within 14 feet of a building and having a dog on Pacific Avenue, not a service dog. And the officer, what did the officer do, Christopher?
Absolutely nothing.
Do you think he possibly had a hearing problem, didn't hear me?
No, I know Officer Albert. His hearing's very good.
And we were actually, he looked our way, I believe.
Absolutely.
In fact, you were perhaps a little apprehensive because you felt, who knows, he might...
I'm sort of vulnerable out here now. I'm not on the radio anymore, so I'm sitting back on the bricks, yeah.
We just came from a radio show.
Yes, we did. We had a great time.
So Officer Albert did not respond to my, shall we say, concern.
Request to bust the yuppie?
Request to, cite the yuppie, warn the yuppie, bust the yuppie. He did absolutely nothing.
To the yuppie, no.
Did he seem to be in a hurry towards some other greater crime?
No.
He was
strolling. Like he was taking an afternoon stroll to me, yeah.
But he was in uniform.
He absolutely was, yeah.
Well, thank you for your testimony. We shall have to get this to the professional standards unit of the police department and see what they have to say.
Well, I imagine you'll get the same result you got from Officer Albert.
Perhaps so. Thank you, Christopher.
You got it, sir.
We have an interview here coming up with a woman in tennis shoes and an A&E hat, a cap actually, with the sign Homeless and Hungry Anything Helps right here at the corner of Soquel and Pacific. What's your name?
Beverly.
Beverly, what brings you to this neck of the corner?
No money right now. I'm waiting for the county to give me my GA, if they give any at all. And I was refused unemployment because Gap fired me and they think I can go just find a job, which I'm trying to find a job. But nothing offered.
Are you outdoors or indoors?
I'm outdoors.
So you're sleeping outside at night?
On the coast, on the beach somewhere. Uh-huh.
And how long have you been in this deplorable condition?
Last year. I'm getting evicted from my apartment in Tracy.
So you have an apartment in Tracy, but
no, we got evicted from the apartment.
How long ago was that?
A little over a year.
And so you've been, and how long did you have your job at the Gap?
Just a month and a half.
And why did they fire you?
They said I didn't show up on time, that I did a no-show, but I came early and the door stated they were closed that day.
And did they know you were houseless?
Yes.
Did they make any special mention of that when they hired you?
No, but they weren't sure. I don't think they were going to hire me. Because
risk wins, dude.
I wasn't sure they were going to hire me because of that.
So, of course, I haven't asked the most important do I get a hug question, because it looks like you're having a hard time holding the sign and everything together here.
What?
Well, that's what many people say when I ask that question. But
No one gets a hug but Jesus.
There you go. So there's the answer. Have you been out here much in the evening?
Yes.
Have you seen much in the way of violence in this area?
I think I see more discouragement than violence.
Have you seen anybody, the reason I asked, for the last 4 or 5 days there have been accounts at night of, some call them troll busters, people coming in to beat up homeless people in front of New Leaf. Have you seen any of that?
I haven't seen that.
And what time do you usually hang out down here at night?
I come down in the late evening, but I haven't seen that.
Are you here late, like 11 or 12?
Not very often, once in a while.
But not in the last 4 days?
Yeah, I've been down here, but I haven't seen it.
Okay.
So I must be missing it.
You're missing all the fun, for one thing.
No drama. I don't like drama.
Well, Beverly, thanks. Any advice for your listeners out there?
Yeah, everybody just wake up, because when they lose their job and they get stuck in the system, it's going to be hard to dig themselves out. And then everybody should help everybody so that they won't have to hold the sign. Nobody should judge people because they never know if they have money or not.
Yes, but aren't you encouraging panhandling by sitting out here? Here are some good, decent tourists and citizens who want to spend their money in the stores. Why should we give you money?
Because I would give them money if they needed it.
Fair enough.
You reap what you sow.
Thanks, Beverly.
All right. God bless.
Hi, this is Christopher Doyen, and I'm here in front of the Gap on Pacific Avenue in Santa Cruz. It is Sunday, September 20th, and in a weird sort of twist here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, I am going to interview Robert Norris. Now, Robert has generously offered about 20 minutes ago to sort of sit with my little homeless guy set up here that I have. I have a sign and a hat out. I got some Street Spirit magazines out here to try to get some donations and everything. And I needed a cup of coffee, so he generously offered to be me, essentially, and take my place here on the bricks while I ran and got a cup of coffee. And I became kind of curious about his experience. So, Robert, my first question is, did you feel, I mean, you're a bigger guy. guy than I am. You're larger physically than I am. You're sitting here on the streets. Clearly, it's a rather unusual circumstance, I mean, to say the least. Did you feel that people took notice of you sitting here?
Well, there was a lot of ignoring, and I noticed a lot of legs walking by. It's a whole different perspective.
But not a lot of heads turning your way.
The occasional woman would smile or look over the situation briefly, but more like, what is this weird phenomenon, and then move on. There was very little human acknowledgement. There's an example.
Now, did you feel at all that people were sort of maybe trying to take a peek out of the corner of their eye, but not quite engage you, like maybe a fear to like look you straight in the eye?
I think that, first of all, people are kind of swept up in whatever they're doing on this Sunday, but also I think there's an apprehension. I think people are afraid to, you know, directly deal with...
Did anybody seem afraid of you?
I didn't notice a lot of fear. Of course, we have a very warm, pleasant day. People seem in a pretty good mood. Some people were looking away. It was hard to tell exactly what they were doing.
Any police officers or hospitality folks come by?
Unfortunately, I was not being protected by either the police or our famous yellow jackets.
Generally speaking, how was your experience of 15 minutes of being homeless?
Well, of course, I would only experience that if I really were homeless. But, you know, I'm sitting here at your stand, and... First of all, as I said, you're looking at people from the kind of the waist down here, and you see a lot of people sort of, it's a different experience than walking up to a person on the street. Normally I greet people on the street and I say hello, and, you know, if they don't, I usually look at them funny, because I like there to be some communication between people on the street, and if there isn't, I get a little concerned. But when you're only looking at people's butts walking by, it's hard to say, hi there, Mr. Butt. You know, you can't, hello up there. You know, you could do that, but.
So did you feel more like an object or more like a human being actually sitting on a sidewalk?
Well, insofar as I was doing my own thing, I felt like a human being. That's, you know, looking at the Street Spirit newspaper, which you're selling here, and giving away.
Giving away for donations. Don't get me in trouble.
You can sell the Street newspaper on the page.
Can I really? All right. There you go. I'm selling them then.
It's legal. It isn't. Let me know about it. We'll have a nice new lawsuit going. Maybe. So I was, you know, while I was reading the Street Spirit, I was me, and occasionally I would see your illegal dog, like we just saw, walking by. Since we're talking about people...
So we should explain, as a rich person or a person of means walking by with a dog and experiencing absolutely no police harassment for it.
Here, but we did see earlier, you and I, Officer Albert, deliberately ignore someone walking up with a large white dog, as I remember, which...
Not to mention the yuppie sprawled on the sidewalk up against the jewelry store.
Right. The Ohm Gallery, whatever.
Oh, sorry, Ohm Gallery. You're right. I'm looking at it actually now as we speak.
Maybe they thought he was not homeless.
Oh, God, Robert. Well, I guess I want to close this interview with just asking you, did you get any donations?
No, I didn't get a single penny off this crowd. I'll tell you, it's a tight group.
And you certainly do look homeless. I mean, you've got the sort of wild hair and the big beard going on, and I mean, you certainly looked the part. So it's not that wasn't it at all. So did you feel that people were being generous to you in any way, shape, or form?
Well, they weren't being hostile. I would say, occasionally you got the occasional smile. They were being tolerant of me, and they were being. Accepting in a certain sense of me. Whether they accepted my rap, I would say they weren't offering me anything.
Do you think you'd enjoy doing this on a daily basis every single day?
Every minute of it. I don't know what the homeless are complaining about. It's a fun activity. I mean, you get to see all kinds of white upper middle class people.
Who don't bother to even acknowledge your existence.
Well, I mean, what am I worth anyway? I'm just a... homeless person, know what I mean?
Thank you, Robert. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And as usual, I'm running out of time here, about 7 minutes till Dennis, and 7 minutes till 8. That's Uncle Dennis from the Cream of the Dregs coming back from, who knows what he's coming back from, a vacation perhaps, perhaps a terrorist meeting with questionable people. Perhaps he can explicate to the authorities. I hear a knock on the door even as I speak, so I'm going to have to answer the door and then give my final report.
Who is it?
Voice says me, so I will assume that is me we all know and love, Uncle Dennis. So Uncle Dennis has entered the premises and will be with you in about six minutes.
Back.
Yes, you can hear he's with you right now, whether we like it or not. But he is indeed back. And I perhaps we'll take, during your show time, we'll interview you if you'd like, Dennis.
You're doing such a great job of being interviewed, Robert.
Oh, shucks. It's nice of you to say so. I do have a couple, one last story I'm going to read here. This has to do with an interview I actually tried to get with activists up in Portland who are again camping and protesting at City Hall. And here's the story. For the second time in less than 2 years, a group of homeless people are camping outside of Portland City Hall in Oregon to protest an ordinance they view as criminalizing and stopping them from getting a good night's sleep, or perhaps even a bad night's sleep. Beginning at 9 o'clock this evening, 20 individuals, that was 3 days ago, set up their sleeping bags and other belongings along the southern side of the front entrance of City Hall. Art Rios, who is organizing the protest, says that people are camping there this year for the same reason as they were last year. We want the anti-camping ordinance to be suspended, he says. We want a campsite that's safe. The anti-camping ordinance is a citywide ordinance that bans camping on public property. People can camp maybe floating down the river or maybe floating in the air or find yourself a piece of private property. Homeless people and many advocates say the ordinance criminalizes homeless people who are forced to sleep in public spaces at night because they do not have access to shelters or other places to sleep. Have you heard this before? For 3 weeks during May of 2008, a group of homeless people ranging in size from 40 to 120 people protested and camped outside of City Hall to protest the anti-camping ordinance and the sidewalk obstruction ordinance known as the sit-lie ordinance, which illegalized sitting or lying down on the sidewalk during the day. In June of 2009, 3 months ago, that ordinance was ruled unconstitutional by Judge Stephen Bushong in district court. Activist Rios says he plans to have organized camps at City Hall Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. to 7 a.m. That, he says, is enough to get 8 hours of sleep, but will not interrupt City Hall's business, as well as get the attention of politicians, advocates, bureaucrats, and the public. It's interesting. We tried to do the same thing at City Hall here in 1996, and then Mayor Mike Rotkin tried to get an injunction to stop us from being there at night. He didn't mind us during the day, ironically, when the city council was in session, in the sense that the city staff was there. But he didn't want us there at night when, in fact, people actually had a need to sleep somewhere safely. That Mike Rotkin, always a puzzle. I want to show the city, Rios continued, that a camp size of 10 to 15 people can be here and not bother their day-to-day process, Rios says. Again, this attempt to accommodate themselves to politicians, I find a misguided effort, but I was glad to see people standing up for their rights one way or another. There is certainly a subgroup of the coordinating committee to end homelessness, a group charged with implementing and overseeing the city's 10-year plan, those 10-year plans, to end homelessness, that is currently looking at ways for homeless people who do not have access to shelter to sleep outside at night. And they'll probably continue for the next 10 years to be looking at ways for people who don't have shelter to sleep at night, while at the same time enforcing laws that turn them into criminals for sleeping outside at night. I'm adding a few things to this story, just why not?
Embellishment.
There we go. Otherwise bald and uninteresting narrative, yes. The group is hoping to some of these proposals in place. I guess there's a verb missing. To put some of these proposals in place, I would guess it's supposed to read, in the next 3 to 6 months. Rios is skeptical. I hear about all these proposals. There is no action happening, Rios says. So, actually, I got this information, and you can get this information from Street Spirit, which is the very good street newspaper up in Portland, Oregon. And actually, they threw out the camping ban in Portland, Oregon in 2000, the so-called Watts decision. So I guess they cooked up some other law that was similar. And we're going to hear more about that next time when I come back on Sunday, perhaps, if anybody raises the issue or if I don't find it buried because other issues are more important. Welcome back, Uncle Dennis, and I'm going to kind of turn over the mic to you. As soon as you've got something on here that you want to play, there's There's no discs in the machine, so I could perhaps sing a little a cappella here to kind of tide you. Oh, no, he's pulling out some technological insult to the human voice. It's recorded music. I mean, what the hell is that about? Don't we want Uncle Dennis to do a little singing on his own? Come on, folks. We know you've got a baritone there, or is it a bass? Or is it a bass baritone?
Actually, I do have a baritone.
All right. Well, bury the baritone. No, you've been burying the baritone for too long. Let's open it up. Perhaps Dennis will actually do a little singing on his show. Perhaps people can call in to 427-37772. Oh, forget one of those sevens. And ask Uncle Dennis to finally let us hear the real Uncle Dennis. Anyway, you've been hearing me, and if you want to hear more of me, give me a call on the Huff line, 423-HUFF. Leave your reports at the Sub Rosa Cafe. There's going to be a notebook there, and or post them online. I am looking to see what's cooking on the streets around either police violence against folks. If you get a report from Tom Preston, who reported he was being beaten up by officers Winston and Fellows, he hasn't been seen for a while. We'd like to see if anybody's heard from him. Do get in touch, 423-HUFF. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Talk to you on Sunday.
little bit of John Barleycorn there from the group Traffic from 1970, Freedom Rider, and we start off with Can't Find My Way Home, Eric Clapton, off an album called Eric Clapton Was Here from 1975. I am Uncle Dennis. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM in the Northern Monterey Bay Area, or you could be out there in the wide world out on the weird web at www.freakradio.org. Welcome to From the Cream to the Dregs. And I am back in the studio after a three-week absence in which I was trekking around the High Sierra of California. Specifically, I walked from Kings Canyon National Park down to the middle third of the Kern River in the Golden Trout Wilderness area. And that took about 19 days, covered 62 miles, went over a 12,700-foot pass, off-trail, of course, and many, many other adventures, including fishing and just enjoying the natural beauty of California's wild places. I will have more stories to tell and more adventures to relate to you. But right now, I just want to let you know that coming up in just a few minutes, we are going to go to the Brew of the Week. This week is